from Lord of the Rings, do not come between a Nazgul and his prey. I was looking at him so mad. I was like, do not touch my hand when I'm playing Counter-Strike, you piece of crap.
So you didn't think too much of the thing, John?
No, kind of wasn't expecting much anyway. Not to say I was pretty tense. I think it's a tense film. I don't know if I'm just getting too old or whatever, but man, I was just like shaking like a leaf in my seat and I just couldn't stop, you know?
Okay.
It's about
what you expect. Gotta have something to it then, I guess, maybe. I mean, or maybe, did it feel a bit cheap, you know? Like, lots of, cheap box rather than a sustained feeling of unease or something.
Right. No, it's not a clever film, so. It's more of like they wanted to get everything prop correct. So, like, there's an axe in the original, just sort of an axe just embedded in the wall, and it's kind of like, oh, how do we explain? We need to...
I see, right.
You know, figure out how that got there.
Oh, that's quite annoying, I imagine.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, that's not really... They're not getting the film, really.
It's not the point of a prequel either, really. I mean,
no,
I would have thought. It's not to say, and this is why this thing is like this in this first film, and, you know,
right.
You did this, you did that. You know.
It was a shame, because they kind of toy with some of the interesting ideas in the beginning, you know, like one of the scientist guys kind of goes, well, if it crashed in a cold environment and it can't survive, why would it climb out of the ship, you know, and kind of stuff like that, and I started to think, oh, this might actually go somewhere interesting, and then it just didn't. So,
can you hear me?
Okay. Hi, Hen.
Hey. Well, I wasn't expecting anything major, but I keep on thinking back to how do the, you know, are these guys the actual owners of that ship, or are they, you know, one of the, you know, hitchhikers that killed everything?
Oh, right. Yeah.
So. If they are the owners of the ship, I mean, they got to be intellectual. So I don't understand how the just killing everything correlates to designing a ship that way more advanced than us.
Right.
So that maybe they were just, you know, biological weapons gone wild.
Yeah, or just space vermin.
Yeah.
That was on the outside of the ship and crawled away or whatever when it crashed.
Well, the thing is, how did that guy power the ship up? So I assume it knows something about...
And why, if it just wanted to leave, like, why would it bother with trying to assimilate people? It would just get in the ship and leave. You know, I didn't quite understand what its motivations would be. You know, they obviously don't explain that.
Yeah. It's just, I can't understand anything so basic, capable of so advanced, you know, foundations. It's not possible. So maybe it's like a larvae stage where later on where they... If left to develop by themselves, they'll develop some form of intellect. But anyway, that's what I was thinking watching this whole gruesome movie. It's like trying to get an excuse on why all these blood and gore is happening.
Yep.
Sure.
But it was okay. No big deal.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't add anything to the original, and it just makes you appreciate or want to watch the original, you know, as a film, so... Which I don't think did that well at the box office when it came out. It was, you know, considered a schlocky... The story I read is the original film came out around the same time that E.T. came out. And so public consciousness was like, oh, aliens are kind of happy, fuzzy little creatures, you know. And this was very much not the same, in the same vein. So, I guess I should say this is the Geek Word of Mouth podcast. For 3rd of December, I'm John.
I'm Will. Thank you.
I'm Hen, and I'm sick.
Oh.
But I still play games.
That's the best thing to do when you're sick, right?
Yeah.
Besides resting.
It's funny because I was playing Counter-Strike when the sick nephew came over. He was like 8 or 9. And I was playing Counter-Strike, and he wanted to play. So he grabbed my hand and pulled my hand away from the mouse as I was gunning someone down. And I turned around and I looked at him, and the thing that came into my mind was, from Lord of the Rings, do not come between a Nazgul and his prey. I was looking at him so mad. I was like, do not touch my hand when I'm playing Counter-Strike, you piece of crap. But and then he coughed on me.
So he had his revenge. Yeah.
Yes, and now I'm sick because of him.
There you go. It was a biological warfare.
Right. But.
Well, sorry you're sick, but thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. No, no problem.
Thank you also for, you know, being very, very far away. You know, so there's no danger.
No contamination.
Of us getting sick either. Yeah.
Oh, that's perfectly fine, I guess. I wouldn't want to give this to anybody, anyways.
Sure.
I played that game that you recommended, To the Moon.
Okay.
It was interesting. I think the thing that pulls that game off, for those who don't know, that's an indie game of, it's kind of like a RPG, Japanese graphics type. But I think the thing that carries that game to, you know, a higher level is the music. The music's really good.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't tried it yet, actually. I recommended it and didn't look at
it really?
Myself. Yeah.
Oh, really? That's, okay. Well, I thought you played it.
No.
No, it was interesting. Kind of slow if you're not into, you know, the reading and just being patient. It might be a little bit too slow for some people. But, you know, if you stick with it, the story's interesting. But I think the music is what carried it for me. So I haven't solved it yet.
Can't remember if it's a very long game or not. I'm not sure where I saw the recommendation originally. But just looked interesting.
Yeah, I'm on scene two, and it did drag out, and I have to admit I fell asleep on one occasion.
Wow.
But that's because,
that's a winning,
you know,
endorsement.
No, yeah, that's right. Because I'm sick, you know, I didn't get to sleep well, so I was kind of nodding off. But if I wasn't, I'm sure I would enjoy it a lot more better.
Yeah, it's not the ideal sort of environment to experience a game. Sort of like watching a movie on a flight. On a long-haul flight or something.
Yeah. Yep.
But it says, according to the website, it's an RPG/adventure game about two doctors traversing through the memories of a dying man to fulfill his last wish.
Yeah, there's some strange moments there, and I'm still curious on how they would make you know, everything tie together, because it's very strange. You got this, the main character's wife is like kind of seems mentally problematic, and she makes like rabbit origamis, a lot of them, all over the house, and there's no explanation on why yet, so I'm interested in how they explain that. But, you know, that's one of the games I've been playing. What have you guys been playing?
Arkham City.
Same here.
Yeah.
I tried it out, and I don't know, maybe because I was frustrated on setting up the joystick, but I haven't really delved into it yet.
Did you play... You played Arkham Asylum, I guess.
Yes, I did.
And you enjoyed it?
Oh, yes, tremendously. I know there's opinions out there that it is better and pretty good, but I will dig into it. Trust me, I will. It's just right now I'm kind of frustrated that my Logitech joystick is not adjusting well to that game.
It's a shame you don't have a 360, because you can just use a 360 controller, which is what I've been doing.
That's what it's designed for, but unfortunately, for some apparent reason, they don't have a, you know, a calibrate, you know, built into the game. It's fixed, so you can't change anything.
Oh, right.
So
that's a bit annoying.
Buttons are fine, but my axes are messed up. When I go down, it goes up. So, anyways, that's but how you guys experience it?
I think I've pretty much finished it now, actually.
Really? Okay.
Oh, it's been a busy week, you know. no, I haven't done, you know, all the Riddler secrets or anything, but I've done the main storyline, and I don't know. The thing says sort of 60% or something. I don't know how much that actually means in terms of everything, but it's good. I really think that they did a very... I mean, I'm a big comic books fan. I always quite like Batman more than sort of, say, Superman or anything that I feel was a bit sort of Superman is a very sort of simple hero, you know, he's very, very powerful, that kind of stuff. I preferred Batman. He's more human, easy to relate to, darker side to him as well, which, you know. And yeah, anyway, they did a very good job of capturing that and Gotham and the various villains and all that kind of stuff. I think it's very, very good, and it's great fun to play.
Absolutely. I think the combat, I don't know, do you feel like the combat, they've made it easier in some ways?
Oh yeah, it's much better than it used to be.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
I used to get beaten up quite a bit by mooks, and now it's fine, except the ones with the guns. I've never quite figured out how to do the stealth sections. My main tactic involves sort of, you know, shouting a death cry and running at them and getting shot. It's not quite Batman's normal modus operandi, but...
Yeah, as long as it works.
It doesn't work, John, no.
Oh, okay.
You get sort of one or two of them, maybe, and then the others find you and kill you. I'm getting better. Anyway, I mean, it obviously got me to the end of the game. What can I say?
Yeah.
I wasn't playing on hard or anything.
I've really enjoyed it. I feel like they... a lot of other reviewers have said they feel like they've actually tried to cram too much into the game, and I kind of see what
I know what
saying.
You mean, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I'm enjoying it still, but yeah, there does feel like there's quite a lot that you can do, because you've got most of your gadgets that you had from the first time around and from the start, and then they're teaching you about all these other gadgets that you can kind of play around with. And but it actually reminds me a little bit of Assassin's Creed in some ways now, more than Arkham Asylum, where, you know, there's all these sort of events that you can encounter, you know, political prisoners to rescue and that kind of thing.
The phones.
Yeah.
The trophies. The guy killing people. Well, the various people killing people using various different methods.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in there, which is nice, but it feels like you can sort of be pulled in multiple directions sometimes, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a certain amount of urgency to some of your... you know, to the main story missions.
Well, indeed,
know?
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, oh, well, I'm here, I'll just do it, you know, because I obviously know that this thing that's happening is not going to come to a head immediately. So even though they make it quite... I mean, the game kind of takes note of it. Like, you get those voicemails from Joker, you know, sort of saying, you better do something about this, you know.
Yes.
It's good.
I was sad to hear that Mark Hamill is no longer going to be voicing the Joker in media.
Yeah,
always done a brilliant job, I think, from sort of the animated series onwards, and I think he did a very, very good job in Arkham Asylum and again in Arkham City, and it's sad.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, he is the Joker now, which is just kind of weird to think that, you know, Luke Skywalker is...
Yeah, right. For someone that has already such an iconic role, I guess, because it's voice acting, you know, you don't quite have it in the same way.
No, when I first heard about that in the original, the Batman animated series, you know, I was blown away. I just, wow, that's, you know, had no idea he was such a talented voice actor. But yeah, the game's good. I'm enjoying it. I think I'm probably about 30 or 40% through, because I've been doing some of the challenge maps with Catwoman, because I think when you buy it on the Steam thing, you get Catwoman. I guess it's when you buy it new, you get Catwoman. And I was kind of tempted to get the Robin stuff, but I decided not to spend my money on that for the moment. So I don't think it really adds that much. It's just another skin for you to, you know, it's just a different way of fighting. I've heard that his fighting style is a lot, it's kind of like a mixture between Batman and Catwoman. So,
right.
Because Catwoman's very fast.
Yes. You know,
she feels like ultra, uber fast. No, the game's good. But I dropped Skyrim to start playing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was really enjoying Skyrim. I think it's a really good follow-up. Although a mutual friend, you know, Rich, who kind of likes rules mechanics, you know, was... I may have mentioned this last time. I can't remember if we spoke about this, but, you know, he just sort of said, oh, there's no stats, you know. And I thought he meant, like, stats in how many, you know, like in GTA, where you've, like, how many cars you've jacked.
Oh, right, I see.
Et cetera. And,
you mean sort of like your alchemy has gone up to, you know, 15 instead of 14.
Right.
Whatever arbitrary value that signifies about how good an alchemist you are.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, no, like, there's no strength, intelligence, and dexterity, or any a lot of those RPG elements.
I think, have just been stripped away. Video game RPGs, it's good that they're freer to move away from that kind of thing, because, I mean, I remember, you know, I bring it up every so often, but Baldur's Gate, I've playing for it recently, there's an option in there, you can have it show the rolls it makes every time, you know, you make an attack or anything, or like a lockpick check or something, which is a terrible idea, I think. It sort of ruins the immersion.
Right, because I was aiming straight at his head, and it just, you know, because I failed the roll, it, you know, it flubbed it artificially, No, I'm with you there. I think it's more, for me, it's more about the storytelling, you know, and the choices they give you, and being able to affect the world, which I think they've preserved in Skyrim, as I understand things, you know, you can really make some decisions that really affect the outcome of the whole game.
Well, I really, really want to play Skyrim. But first, I really want to play Assassin's Creed Revelations, which came out 2 days ago, and which I have not touched because I've been trying to finish Batman. So, I guess all day tomorrow I'll be doing that. And I bought L.A. Noire and Deus Ex Human Revolution as well.
Oh, wow.
So good, I might have to put Skyrim off until the new year, really. Well, they were on offer on Steam, so why not? These are games I was looking forward to playing.
Yeah, so many games are coming out. With Skyrim, I know I won't be sitting down and playing it anytime soon. So I just basically entered all the cheat codes and ran around naked beating up things.
What?
And, well, you know, all the cheat codes.
Why?
Because I know I won't be playing it for a long time because there's so many games coming out. And I won't have time to sit down to really immerse myself in there. But so I just basically toyed around with it and, you know, beat up elephants and giants with my bare hands. It was fun, you know. But, yeah, it's a too big of a game for me right now to go into. Not to mention all the other ones that are coming out that I want to check out, like Batman eventually. So, but I can tell it's already a good game, just from the first impressions.
So do you guys think it's been a good season, I'm guessing?
Absolutely.
I mean,
even though I've barely touched it so far, you know, Arkham City pretty much been it recently. A few other random bits and pieces before then. But yeah, that on its own, just brilliant. The best superhero game, I think, made yet.
Hmm.
Better than the original, which was really good, but it feels freer to me. That one felt a bit like, you know, you go here and then you do this and then you sort of unlock this area and then you must get all the things in that area and you go around and you could sort of, you could collect everything at the end, I guess, a bit more.
Yeah.
And there's an element of that with Arkham City as well, but no, I think it's great. I think it's less like that and more free and open and Assassin's Creed-y, as you mentioned. I mean, but I love that game, so.
Yeah, I'm still behind. I need to do Assassin's Creed 2.
Better than the first one.
Yeah.
No, quite a lot better, really.
Yeah, I agree. They put a lot of interesting mechanics in. And I've heard good things about Brotherhood as well. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
So. And that I've got on a Steam sale as well. But
yeah, I'm not familiar with the Assassin's Creed storyline. Isn't it in this one you play as the future self?
It's sort of a bit complicated. There's a framing narrative involving this guy who plugs himself into a machine and he can sort of get his ancestors' memories. And in the first game you play as one of his ancestors and then the second two you play as another guy sort of later on in history. It's a really stupid sounding thing, but it doesn't really matter because the game's very, very good.
Yeah.
Right.
Is it supposed to be his genetic memory that they're actually delving
into?
That's
right, yes, yeah.
Which is just, you know, completely implausible. But it allows them to explore some interesting premises. I mean, I like games that are set in, you know, sort of historical fiction type things.
Yeah.
I think there's a certain amount of, you know, verisimilitude and whatnot.
No, they've spent an enormous amount of time making sure it's historically accurate. I mean, I did briefly study Renaissance Italy when I was doing my A-levels, and I learned a bit about sort of Italian architecture and all that kind of stuff, Florence, the city-states, you know. And because, you know, they'd set in that time, the second two games are anyway, I was really able to appreciate, I think, you know, just being able to climb up the Duomo. It was just an amazing moment. So, yeah, utterly wonderful that games are spending all their time, at least things set, you know, historically, spending all their time on making it realistic in that sense. And I guess Arkham City as well, to a lesser extent. I mean, it's based on comics, but you really get the sense that they spent a lot of time reading the comics and reading, you know, these different stories, taking bits and pieces from here and there, things that they enjoyed, things that they thought were compelling, would make a good plot. I think it's brilliant that that people are able to do this, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm interested in the weapon that the assassins use. Is that really in existence, or is that one of the things made up for the game?
That's okay. Yeah, there are certain historical, you know, bits of stretching the truth, and yeah, sort of.
So
that is
the made up.
Blades kind of existed, sort of, but there's not much evidence, as far as I know, that, you know, people generally used them when they were trying to fight.
Well, I see.
Yeah, there's probably better ways of, you know, dispatching people. And if it was Renaissance Italy, it was probably mostly poisons, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Have you guys played the game called Hector's Badge of Carnage?
I
Is that
not.
A Telltale game? Is that like an adventure?
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw it, and I didn't really, for some reason, it looked like it was the same guy who did the Puzzle Agent. Like,
yeah, animation. It's like Leisure Suit Larry, but a little British humor, a lot of British humor instead. I played that. It's pretty good.
Cool. I'll look out for that. I can sort of similarly recommend Been There, Done That, which is it's a new indie adventure, newish indie adventure, very similar to the early mid-90s LucasArts adventures, you know, David Tentacle, Monkey Island games, all that kind of stuff, with a very British sense of humour. It costs nearly nothing, and there's sort of, they did a thing before that called Time Gentlemen Please, which is free, so if you download that and look for it, play through it and enjoy it, give some money to Ben and Dan, who made Ben There, Dan That.
Yeah, I've seen the name come up, but I haven't. You know, there's such a sea.
What's premise? What's it about?
Well, like David Tentacle, it's sort of time machines, basically. There's these two guys, they end up going backwards and forwards in time. But it's very entertaining. It's sort of, I guess, you might say about the LucasArts adventure games, you know, they had the sense of humour of their time. So, like The Simpsons or something. Whereas now, it's sort of shifted things. People feel they're more willing to push boundaries and things like that, you know, more like Family Guy or something else. So it's a bit more risque, but as a result, I think actually a bit funnier. I think some of the comedy in the early LucasArts games is slightly dated. Whereas Been There, Done That felt to me very fresh, very entertaining, very well made, and short and enjoyable.
I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, I've been playing Ultima 7. Wow, that game's old. It's just kind of almost a marvel that it actually just runs on a modern machine.
I'm impressed with what they've done, yeah, with some of the things on good old games.
It's just, it's a great idea. I heard that they were going to change their sort of model to not just have old games, because it's all DRM-free stuff. It's kind of one of their, it's part of their philosophy, you know, is to not mess around with DRM just because it just ends up punishing people who are actually buying the stuff legitimately. So, but no, I think Ultima 7 is probably it. It's just it's very nostalgic for me, and you know, I think the first Ultima I played was Ultima 3. Just really was a one of the sadly to say it was one of the cornerstones of my childhood. I don't know. Have you guys, either of you guys, played the Ultimas? It's probably a bit older for you.
I played 7, the part where it turned platform. That was 8, actually. 8, okay. Yeah, that was my first introduction, and I liked it, but I think people were disappointed in that because they played the older version and they liked it better.
Yeah, it was kind of a mess of a game, lots of bugs, and they tried to scale, make it appeal more to the mainstream, I think, and it sort of failed miserably, because it just ended up appealing to almost no one, except for the diehard fans who still hated every moment they played through it, but still did so, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I probably liked it simply because I wasn't spoiled with the previous versions. I tried playing the older versions, and it didn't appeal to me at all.
They're pretty old. Some of the original Ultimas are.
Yeah.
They were, you know, programmed on an Apple II, so they're. But I think for the time, those RPGs were, you know, fairly progressive. Like I've been on HardcoreGaming101.net. There's like a huge retrospective of the whole series, and the person who wrote this treatise is obviously a fan, but they point out a lot of things that, you know, the game, like a lot of I'm struggling with the words, but a lot of RPGs at the time were very basic. You know, it's just sort of like go out, kill stuff. Come back, get loot, you know, and right. Just do it, repeat, you know. And Ultima, quite early on, tried to diverge from that. The first three were fairly following that premise, you know, not adding not a lot new. But I think in the fourth game is when they introduced sort of the virtues. It became about something more. And I think by 5 or 6, the individual sort of NPCs that you encountered in the world had a lot of personality in their own right, which is something that couldn't be said of a lot of the contemporary games of the time. I think 7 is probably the best game in terms of an experience, although a lot of people like 4 as well, because it's the whole quest for the virtues, and it wasn't just about exploring dungeons and killing monsters. It was sort of about becoming this avatar, becoming this shining, you know, paragon of virtue that the rest of this sort of alternate dimension could look up to.
Yeah.
I don't know. They played around with some interesting ideas, I think. But I couldn't help but play a little bit of that after it was released on GOG.com. Any other recommendations, guys? Anything on your radar? Is there anything you're looking forward to? I think most of the big games are pretty much out for this season, except for The Old Republic.
I don't know. I don't think any of us are Morbius players, are we, really?
No, I'm not.
So we might quietly skip past that one. I hope it doesn't die like Star Wars Galaxies, but I think it probably will eventually.
Yeah, it's hard to.
I mean, that one, as far as I could tell, had a lot of stuff going for it. Particularly the fact that it was, you know, the original trilogy license, which has got to have more brand recognition or whatever than something set thousands of years in the timeline before.
Yeah, I want it to succeed, but basing on the impressions I've seen on demos and whatnot, it's not that really impressive. I mean, it's just like your standard MMO. It's nothing, you know, that makes it, hey, I want to play this. I can get this free, you know, with Perfect World and anywhere else. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope it does well because it could be interesting. But I mentioned before, if they introduce some things, some elements like, you know, space, you know, spaceship, you know, fighting, then that might change. My opinion might change. So.
Yeah, we'll see. So, it's kind of a wait and see for me, particularly because I'm not a big MMO fan. I really just don't think the attitude is right yet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously commercially successful, but I think people collectively are going to get bored with that premise, especially because there's so much competition from the free and the freemium market, you know, from the freemium side. So, although I'm interested to see what Blizzard is cooking up with Titan. I mean, it will be interesting. And I think Guild Wars 2, their marketing platform is more or less, this is an MMO for people who hate MMOs. And they actually, NCSoft did some interesting things with the original Guild Wars. I did play around with it for a time. I think we all did, didn't we? I don't know. And
yeah, that was my first MMO experience.
And it was, you know, it wasn't really an MMO in the same style as WoW, but they did a lot of things that were interesting because it had no subscription fee, did it? I mean, it was just more like a Diablo lobby kind of thing. So
yeah. No, their design was very nice, but their lack of freedom is what I would compare to that and my experience with WoW. When I came, I played Guild Wars first, and you know, the paths are constrictive, and you can't really jump. So you pretty much are, you know, have your narrow points you need to go. But when I played World of Warcraft, I can jump, I can do all that. I can even, like, you know, find a bug in the system itself and report it. So that was one of the cool things that, you know, World of Warcraft had, was that the amount of freedom. And I hope they implement that in number two, where it's free roaming instead of constricted paths. Which seems, I mean, yeah, fine, but for a game that's like interactive and social, the little bit of freedom really helps. Mm. So I hope they change to something like WoW.
Anything you guys looking forward to, like next year, or that's slated for release? Just out of curiosity.
I'll be playing all these games I just bought in the Steam store until 2013, John.
Yeah, I haven't been really looking that far. I mean, there's tons of games. We haven't even mentioned the consoles, like Uncharted 3 and whatnot.
Yeah.
Have you guys played Modern Warfare 3? Did you guys pick that up?
No, not yet.
No. It honestly, it doesn't really appeal to me that much anymore. I haven't even picked up Battlefield. And I had originally been planning on it, and I don't know.
Oh, Saints Row 3, we haven't mentioned that. That's out. Apparently it's very fun, but I slightly feel that it might have gone a bit too far off the deep end. I mean, some of the reviews I've seen have suggested that. Some of the footage from the videos and whatever has suggested that as well. But, I mean, I'll give it a try, definitely. I really enjoyed the second one.
Yeah, I think I was a little bit more sold before I read some of the reviews. The reviews have been, they've just said, yeah, it's a really fun game, but I don't think there's actually a lot of content there. And it's a shame that I guess in the second game, some of the bosses or the opposing forces that you encountered were really interesting. You know, they're these weird gang leaders. And in the third game, they're pretty much just introduce these guys and kill them off straight away, like they're just not even a threat, really. And then they introduce this sort of very generic paramilitary organization called STAG, and they just said it just has no personality. It's not like Well, it's in the second Saints Row, I guess you were engaging in these campaigns against these other gang leaders or whatever they were, and just driving them completely insane with the stuff that you were doing.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't take place in the third game. You know, they just basically get offed, and they introduce some interesting characters, and then they're just completely what's the word? It's just like a straw man that you just take down, and then
right. It feels slightly hollow as a result.
It sounds like it would be fun, like Just Cause, like if you got it on a real cheap Steam sale and you just farted around with it.
I enjoyed Just Cause, actually, the first one. I haven't played the second one because it would require me to upgrade my operating system. Curse them also for that. That's a terrible thing to do to gamers.
Yeah, so you're on XP and...
I am, yes.
It doesn't run on XP.
No, indeed. Vista or higher only. My hope with Saints Row is that, as you say, you'll pick it up and it will be fun. Can I do a quick plug, actually?
Sure.
My friend Jan Best wrote a review for game.co.uk, which he thought was brilliant. He said he thought it was brilliant. And he wrote it sort of in the first person as Saints Row 3, which I enjoyed.
As the game itself.
As indeed, yes. So it's just like, you know, screw you, Grand Theft Auto, with your overall attempts at moralizing. You make the protagonist a murderous psychopath, but you want players to empathize with him. You force them to sit through hours of tedious sub-soap opera character development to watch this immoral wreck of a man angst over his friends and family, fall in love, and spend time indulging in humdrum activities, all in some misguided attempt to build a connection with him, to have players sympathize with his need to massacre thousands upon thousands of people. Sod that, I'll show you storytelling, and so on and so forth. It's very good.
Yes. Sorry, I don't know. I'll have to check that out. It's I thought it was a review of game.co.uk, of like the actual website or something, but
No,
it's on their website.
On their website. Game.co.uk.
There seems to be a salsa dancing club outside. I don't know if you guys can hear that.
I can hear a little
bit. Hear something, yeah. How odd.
That's
wait till that passes.
I thought that's wait, there's salsa in England?
Yes.
Yeah, you get it on the table with guacamole and stuff.
Oh, I thought you're talking about
dances.
The dance. Oh my god. Okay. Wow, that's kind of freaky.
We do things differently in our country. A fusion between our love of dance as a country, we're famous dancers in Great Britain, and our love of Mexican food, which we also love.
Salsa. Wow.
Things. Yes.
I didn't know it reaches that far.
But salsa dancing is actually Spanish, isn't it? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. So,
well, you know, going back to the Batman motif,
yes,
or game, I'm actually not a fan of Batman at all. I'm a fan of the game, but the Batman comic character, I really doesn't appeal to me at all, because one of the things I want to complain about Batman mostly is because the villains, and I know these writers, they do it for, you know, continuation and to, you know, make a story. But I have a problem with the villains being alive, if that makes any sense.
You think he should kill them?
Well, to the point where, like, you know, how many times do you want to cycle this guy through the system?
I see. Isn't that a problem? I mean, yes, okay, slightly, of Batman, because they're incarcerated and, you know, they keep coming back, but of comic book villains sort of as a whole.
Yeah, well,
you think Batman's villains are just sort of worse,
well,
about it, because
let's put
more
it this way,
psychopaths.
I think if the Joker was a live person, he would have been on death row by now.
And, oh, absolutely.
And, you know, with Batman, I like I like it that he respects the law, but there's a point where, you know, I like to compare it to this. Batman is to Superman as Rorschach is to Batman. Rorschach from The Watchmen. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that character, but that character right there is, if Batman was Rorschach, I'd be happy, because Rorschach did what was necessary, even though, you know, even outside of the fringe of society, he did it just because, you know, he doesn't want to go rogue, but the thing is, something that's innate and basic in, you know, handing out justice to something that's so...
Well, he was uncompromising, right?
That could be it, too.
So is Batman, but in a different way, I think. I mean, he basically saw how killing people completely ruins lives, because his parents were killed and it completely ruined his life. So I can sympathize sort of in some ways. Yeah, okay, it's unrealistic, as you say, that the justice system hasn't, for whatever reason, managed to nail proper convictions on some of these people, get them on death row and keep them there and then lethally inject them, and then, you know, they're not a problem anymore. But I can understand why you wouldn't want to kill people, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, that's the part that I can't relate to something that's actual real or actual makes sense, because if Batman wants to equate, you know, not killing somebody to, like, keeping some form of, you know, I don't know, code, then that's, I mean, basically Joker is alive to continue killing because Batman refuses to hand out what is needed, to do what is needed, basically to end the guy. And so what he does is, you know, takes him to the place, somehow he escapes and kills again, and then Batman captures him, brings him back, and then, you know, he escapes and does it again. After the third or, you know, second time, I think a real person who wants to end the suffering that this guy is causing others would pretty much, you know, take it into his hand to stop it permanently. And, you know, Joker,
well, I don't want to say that there are, I don't want to give any spoilers about the game, but this is a question that does come up in the course of the game. And hopefully, you know, you'll get there and you'll feel that they've dealt with it in a realistic fashion that sort of takes a nod towards this idea of actually why doesn't he just kill some of these people.
Now, I hope so, because, I mean, Joker's just one out of many. I mean, we're talking about Penguin, we're talking about, you know, the Riddler, we're talking about tons of these criminals that in the end, you know, you can immerse yourself in the story, or you can, like, try to ignore the fact that the writers are just keeping these guys alive so they can continue writing and make it an industry, or making a, you know...
I don't disagree, but I don't feel that it's a more serious problem with any of sort of Batman's villains than it is with anybody else's, really.
Well, and, yeah, that's...
I mean, there are obviously series out there which take this kind of stuff a bit more realistically. The Punisher Max series for Marvel, for example. I mean, the Punisher is always a character that's never been afraid to kill people, and there aren't a lot of recurring villains in that because he kills them.
Well, I don't mean in a sense where, like, you know, you're judge, jury, and executioner, but there's a point where you just, you know, I'd like somebody to just have the okay to have Batman, you know, end somebody simply because it's the, you know, the greater good. And so far, it's always, you know, one step back where, no, Batman doesn't go there, even though he knows in the future this guy was going to cause somebody else to die. And it's like...
Well, it's like Rorschach, you know, I mean, where does it stop? You know, if you follow that to its logical conclusion, you know, or if where do you...
Where do you draw the line?
Yeah, where do you draw the line?
I mean, obviously, to not kill people. Well, you're right. It's a gray area, but there's also areas where it's totally obvious. For example, the criminal minds, like the Joker. He's killed many people. Not to mention, you know, the Penguin and tons of other people in the Batman universe that has killed people over and over again, and yet you know, if you're going to question then where is the line, you're in big trouble. Because that's why I have a thing against Batman. It's like, I can't believe you can't draw a distinction of, like, if you end these guys, no more people will die. And, you know, I might be reading into it too much, but, you know, that's my beef against Batman, is because people are doing this to continue the story and to continue the cycle.
Absolutely. It's part of the canon. You know, there's always going to be the Joker, the Penguin, Riddler. You know, there's always going to be Batman. His parents are always going to have been murdered in the past. He may or may not have Robin with him, but he probably does. There will be these various villains, because that's what makes him Batman, in a sense. Like, right. If he dressed up as an owl or something, you know, he wouldn't be Batman anymore. It wouldn't be the same character. And there's stuff which people sort of know about Batman, and one of the things they know about is the Joker, and that's because of the 60s TV show, it's because of the more recent films, and it's because, you know, of the comics. It's just stuff that people have through cultural osmosis.
Well, I'm fine with that, but then when people start going into the, you know, deeper character and define Batman and whatnot, that's when I have a problem with it, because it's basically just a cartoon character.
Well, exactly.
So...
you know, you kind of have to take it with a certain grain of salt, I guess. I don't know. I mean, for me, I think it depends on your perspective, but most of your mainstream audience are probably people who are average, and they wouldn't necessarily take it that extra step, I think. I think that's what makes people identify really strongly with the character of Batman. Because you can kind of empathize in terms of his origin story, like why that's at the core of his values, you know, to not kill anyone or to not use, you know, guns and firearms or whatever, because, you know, he had two of his closest family members killed by them. But yeah, I see what you're saying, Han. It's making it shatters that suspension of disbelief for you, because you're just like, well, this is just unrealistic that these. But I kind of take the series, you know, it's a comic book, you know, so right. There's certain things that I kind of go along with, and I think a lot of the comic book superheroes, like Batman, is one of the few that's has resonated with me. But sorry, Will, you're going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, there's a lot of other characters you can have similar things about. I mean, Spider-Man is always going to have sort of spider powers. He may or may not have web shooters, but, you know, kind of spider powers. He's probably quite young, a student, something like that. He got into it because his Uncle Ben was killed. That's stuff that people sort of know about Spider-Man, and people know some of the Spider-Man villains as well, I expect. Green Goblin, you know, Dr. Octopus. The memorable ones, anyway. And what I was going to say was that actually I was quite impressed with how sort of Arkham City, and to a lesser extent Arkham Asylum, but how far they went into the Batman mythos about, you know, using Oracle and stuff like that. Obviously she was crippled at some point in the past, presumably, like the Joker, like she was in the comics, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's not immediately accessible necessarily, but actually you can still play through it and still enjoy it, knowing only a tiny amount about Batman.
Yeah, they put the references in there for the people that know it, and
absolutely, if you don't, like the Royal Flush playing card company I saw, that was entertaining for me. But probably not for anyone that's not a big comic geek.
Yeah, which unfortunately is me. I didn't read enough of those. That wasn't my sort of main bag during the sort of the comic years, that, you know, my first formative comic years. it's the game's good. I can't say that I'm avidly anticipating the next film in the Christopher Nolan series. I mean, it will probably be a decently watchable film. I mean, the second one, I think, was better than the first in terms of exploring. I don't know. Rich had a theory that it's the films with the Joker in it that really are the ones that have been good films of all those, of the two sort of recent Batman series.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree. I mean, when I originally saw the first Tim Burton Batman, I thought, Michael Keaton is a weird choice for this character. You know, it didn't fit this sort of standard action movie role, but it's actually not, of all those films, it's probably the best of that, you know.
Yeah, no, it
the
is.
The 90s Batman.
I agree. And then, I think that, again, they spent quite a lot of time on getting the style of the film right. You know, Gotham in those films is really atmospheric, really sort of the gothic architecture, the sort of creepy dark corners where, you know, terrible things can happen, all that kind of stuff. I like that. And Batman Returns was similar, although a little bit sillier, and then the other two aren't really worth talking about, I don't think. And then Batman Begins was all right. Christian Bale was quite a good choice for Batman. The rest of it was kind of okay. Dark Knight was quite good. I think better than Batman Begins. I slightly feel that Heath Ledger's performance was overrated. I mean, he was good, definitely, but I didn't feel that he was like the Joker, I suppose. He was definitely portraying a character, but I'm not sure if it was the Joker.
I thought he did a pretty good job. I mean, I think he was trying to follow up Jack Nicholson doing the role, and that's got
Jack
to be
Nicholson,
difficult.
I don't know. I mean, he mostly sort of played Jack
himself.
Nicholson
yeah,
playing that's... Jack the Joker, which was a bit sort of, you know, it's all right, it's fine.
Yeah, but I think if anyone in real life is the Joker, that's not too far away, you know.
Sure, okay.
I don't know. To me, I thought he did a great job, but yeah, I get what you're saying. He's kind of tends to play himself, but you know, I think of him from The Shining, you know, and that's probably what they thought of, you know, as this guy losing his mind. And Ledger did a good, he made a powerful performance. I don't know, I agree with you. It's not, I think I tend to see the Joker more like the character that's in Arkham Asylum in Arkham City,
sort of the one from the animated series, although maybe a bit darker and more adult.
Malkavian type of, you know, freak, basically.
Yes, yeah.
Playful and charming in some ways, but also just completely, you know, mind-bogglingly insane. Just you can't help but like him, but you're also afraid of him kind of character, you know.
Yeah.
If you were
That's
actually
a very,
faced
very
with
difficult
him.
Character to right, and I guess it's even harder to portray effectively, you know, on the screen or with your voice or whatever.
Well, we were saying that I think the whole... when I first heard about Batman Begins, I heard that it was supposed to be adapting Year One, which is probably not the case, as I understand it, but I was really hoping for a gritty sort of Batman in the real world kind of thing, where it was like everything was more or less, you know, just more realistically portrayed, you know. Even though he's a millionaire, in real life, he might not have unlimited resources to create, you know, sort of the same thing. So I was sort of expecting more of a mass vigilante kind of guy, rather than what we got, which was somewhere between James Bond and, you know, the original Batman films. I guess it was a bit more fantastic than I was expecting. I was hoping for something a bit more realistic, and that's why I kind of been a little bit lukewarm about the series more than mainstream press seems to have been. So anyway, sorry, that's kind of rambling
off. No, I feel the same way, John. It's all right. It's quite good. But, I mean, I know we keep coming back to the animated series and, you know, the feel of that. But from the introduction, I think you get a really, really good sense of Gotham, this almost Art Deco, futuristic, but in an archaic sense, slightly. So, you know, blimps instead of planes, that kind of stuff. That is interesting to me, and I think that uniquely captures a place that isn't quite real and isn't quite, you know, complete fiction either, like a Superman comic where, you know, he's pushing planets around or using laser vision or whatever. So it's very hard, as I say, to find something that fits between between things. And particularly, it's very weird that Superman and Batman can exist in the same universe and, you know, have adventures together and that kind of thing when Batman's, you know, Gotham is so dark and horrible and miserable and Metropolis is so shiny and bright and wonderful. I mean, you know, Superman could visit Gotham and probably sort out quite a few of the problems quite quickly.
Yeah.
But again, you have to suspend your disbelief. And as a comic fan, it's something I've been doing for a long time. It's not really a problem for me anymore.
I know what you mean, yeah. It's...
I have a problem with that, so I don't think I'd enjoy it as much.
Sure, well, I mean, there are obviously other comics out there that have tried to be very consistent in the rules of their universe and what it's about, that kind of thing. But it's not going to be household names like Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, the X-Men, you know, that kind of stuff. It's very hard to do that with these existing characters that have had, I mean, nearly 80 years of history for Superman.
Yeah, wow.
It's a long, long time, you know, and obviously in that time there's been a whole bunch of things that contradict various things,
the various... whole business of selling comics is involved.
Exactly.
In that, right?
Yeah. It's like using... I mean, I've read various things that compare it to something like Greek myth, where they say, okay, so although in this other story, you know, things happen like this, actually this is the same character. It's just sort of at another point in his... And then he did this over here. And maybe it was between two of those things that happened, you know. But anyway, it's him, and he's over here, and he's doing this. So this is what happened to Hercules next.
Yeah, that got ridiculous for me real quick. It's like basically you're just milking it. And I don't know, have you, maybe because I was introduced to manga or Japanese comics first, and then, I mean, I was surrounded by American comics, correct, but I wasn't involved. So I read manga first, and then I explored American comics, and it was like, why... Right. Why are people liking this? Because basically it's just 2D. Whereas, well, that's my personal opinion. Whereas manga, sometimes it's really in-depth. And, you know, there's very rare characters like, you know, if Batman was in a manga, I don't think he would do that well. Because, I don't know, there's, you know, a character that doesn't kill simply because he doesn't want to kill and, you know, or is blind to the repercussions of his actions for not acting. It's just 2D for me. But, yeah, the manga is what I was, you know, after reading the manga and I go back to the comic, it's just like, this is not appealing at all to me. So, have you guys read Berserk?
No, although I know of it.
Yes, very nice comic. I've also read Akira, the manga version. Sure. It's good, but it's kind of the ending kind of disappoints. But there's also, you know, Claymore, tons of other comics out there or Japanese comics out there that just to be honest, put American comics to shame. I mean, I don't except for, you know, with some exceptions like, you know, The Watchmen and. You know, some of the drama-oriented comics. But other than that, I just don't understand why American comics are, you know, even survives compared to the Japanese manga. I don't know. What's your guys' take on it?
I think that there's just sort of wholly different audiences. Because, you know, I always sort of was frustrated by the fact that a lot of the Japanese animation seemed to be about more adult things, and it was my impression that in America anything that was animated was just for kids, you know, and so it just, I mean, that's changed now. It's a lot different in these days, but I think in general that sort of idea still kind of persists. I mean, like, you think about The Incredibles, which is a great film, but it is still a family sort of oriented movie. It's not made for adults, whereas I think there's quite a lot of, you know, animated media in Japan that is for all sorts of range, you know, of ages. You know, it's not just for children, it's not just for young children, it's for, you know, teenagers, young adults, you know, what have you. You know, it kind of runs the gamut more over there. I think they see animation and comics or, you know, illustration as just another medium. Because in the director's commentary for The Incredibles is actually really good if you're into commentaries. But Brad Bird is very well spoken. He's very he's got a good vocabulary, and he's just a fascinating guy to listen to. But that's one of the things that sort of bugs him, because obviously that was one of the films that kind of helped catapult his career. And people would come up to him and say it all the time, like, going, "Oh, how's the animation genre?" You know, and he'd be like, "Well, it's not really a genre. It has a whole host of genres inside it." So, I don't know. That's my take. Will, what's your?
My feeling is that there is plenty of invention in American comics or Western comics. It's just that maybe you're not going to find it in mainstream titles so much. I mean, DC, they're reasonably good about trying new things. They run a bunch of titles under the Vertigo imprint. And there's some slightly out there stuff like Sweet Tooth, Chew, I guess, is a Vertigo title, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. No, it's an Image title, sorry. Yeah. They're willing to do slightly different and new things that isn't about capes and spandex. It is there. It can be harder to find in the mainstream DC and Marvel universes.
Yeah, just sort of thinking back to Batman in the game, I think the way he is a bit sort of muscle Mary looking, you know, he does look a bit, the physique in certain ways is definitely not realistic, but it's still something I can sort of be on board with in terms of a superhero. But when you sort of realize that he's wearing these sort of black Y fronts, you know, like this, these black shorts, it does kind of like look weird, you know, and you think, oh, that is, yeah, a superhero character. But sorry, that was a little off the point.
But again, it's the costume is as much as part of the canon as anything else, you know. If he wasn't dressing like a bat, if he didn't have a symbol on the chest in the middle, maybe it's not got, you know, the yellow thing, but
yeah,
it might do. Utility belt, and indeed black Y fronts. It's not quite Batman.
Yeah, exactly. And it, as Eric, a friend of ours, a mutual friend of Hen and I's, pointed out one time, like, those characters have become so iconic, like Superman, that you kind of don't see that, and it doesn't seem as laughable as it would be to someone who's just appeared on the planet and said, "Oh, what's this?" You know, it's just ridiculous. This guy running around in his pajamas, you know.
There's a comic book artist who's very, very famous called Alex Ross. He spends a lot of his time trying to make things look very realistic. He gets people, you know, to model for him when he's doing his art. And his art is generally, it does look silly, I think. It's very realistic looking, but as a result, it looks a lot like people, you know, dressed up as superheroes, which looks ridiculous, as anyone that's ever been to a comic convention can tell you.
Have you guys noticed?
No offense to cosplayers out there, actually, some of you are very good.
Well, you know, they say the name doesn't make a person, the person makes a name. So, you know, the costume doesn't make a person. If a person wears silly clothes and, you know, turns out, you know, he does some cool things, and it makes the clothing cool, I guess. So maybe that's...
Yeah. Have you guys noticed that there's a lot of films based around sort of average Joe people trying to be vigilante, you know, costume superheroes? I mean, since Kick-Ass, obviously, which was not very realistic, but...
Well, it's in the news, isn't it? Wasn't there a recent news of a guy who he's an actual.
There's been a few for a little while, yeah.
I think he's being sued for overdoing it by macing these two guys who are supposedly fighting, but there's discrepancies on if they were fighting or not, and the guy just wanted to break them up, so he maced them all. So,
yeah, vigilantism in the real world, terrible. Superheroes in the real world, a very, very bad idea.
Yep. And most,
I think there's no, there's nothing we can really say beyond that.
What type of movies are you talking about, John? Because I don't recall.
There was one, well, after Kick-Ass, there's one called Defendor with Woody Harrelson. Kind of similar, basically a guy who's slightly touched in the head, decides he's going to be a superhero and, of course, isn't very effective at it as you would be in the real world. And there's another one called Super.
Are these coming out or are they already out?
I think they're out because Super has got one of the guys from the American version of The Office in it. And it, much the same thing, sort of a quirky, I don't know, slightly, obviously not dealing with reality guy decides to become a superhero.
So they're playing it realistically, but for laughs or not quite?
I don't know. Like, Defendor is definitely a sort of a black comedy, but I'm not sure about Super. It seemed to be in a very similar vein. Like, it felt like, the same kind of plot. There was another one. It was kind of a guy not dealing with reality. I think it was like Ryan Reynolds is his superhero, imaginary superhero guy that, appears and helps him out with stuff. I think it was called like Paper Hero or something. I can't remember. But I've just kind of noticed lately and just wondering,
It's obviously I'll be honest, I hadn't really seen that. I did see Kick-Ass. I thought it was useless.
Really?
I don't like Mark Miller much as a writer. I hadn't read the comic, but I sort of thought, well, maybe I'll have a watch and see what it's like. And it just felt stupid.
I just saw it as what it was, as, kind of entertainment for a Saturday afternoon. I liked the comic okay. I thought it wasn't that bad. It was an interesting take on the idea of a teenager who was trying to stand out by being a superhero, and it got beat the crap out of. Basically, he'd been he wasn't invincible by any stretch. So
I'm curious, Will, what doesn't appeal to you with that movie? I'm just curious.
I don't know. It was sort of the violence and everything. It was all really just over the top and just there was no.
It was gratuitous.
It wasn't actually a very good story there. Well, really.
Realism. I don't know about realism, but I think the movie was okay. But it's kind of a vindication on my part, going back to Batman doing justice and whatnot. When Nicolas Cage just did what he did, that scene where he just took business into his own hands and just, I was thinking, that should be Batman right there. That's a Batman I'd like to see. It's just basically...
That's not Batman.
Right. That's
yeah,
not
as
Batman.
As we discussed, I mean, because Batman doesn't kill, and that's one of the things people know about Batman. Like
exactly.
Gadgets and that kind of things. I appreciate what you're saying, but... If you want to see that, you don't really want to see Batman.
Yeah.
You want to see someone else.
The Punisher or whatever, yeah.
Well,
it's like kind of saying, well, I really like Harry Potter, but it would be much better if it was all in space. And, instead of the wands, they had lasers. I'd really enjoy that. I mean, you want to watch Star Wars or something,
Well, if you want to compare the two, if you want to compare Harry Potter to, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter's for kids as Batman. Whereas the hero in Kick-Ass for me is the grown-up version because it's Lord of the Rings.
What sense is he a grown-up? He displays no maturity. He displays no kind of competence about anything. You just mean because it's a story with violence and it's for grown-ups.
Are you talking about Nicolas Cage's character?
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant the kid in it. I can't remember his name. Kick-Ass, yeah.
Well, the thing is, you know, that to me is a display of the passion that Batman should have, you know, when his kids got killed, whereas his life was pretty much ruined. Nicolas Cage's character is pretty much ruined by this organization. And that's a passion I wanted to see from Batman, you know, to bring justice, some form of justice for what was done to him. And
I would disagree with you with your analysis of Nicolas Cage's character. Was he called Big Daddy? Is that right?
Yeah.
As a passionate character,
it was just nuts. Wasn't it?
Yeah, that was more what I felt. He wasn't really.
Well, he was driven to that way, right? Because his life was ruined. His wife, I believe, killed herself because they pretty much framed him. And, you know, I don't know if a loved one of you guys have ever been, like, destroyed like that, but it can be traumatic. And the passion that I mentioned is from that, through that pain, he pretty much have decided on a determined course. And that determined course is basically to destroy this group that has ruined him. And it might not show that passion. You know, I might be reading too much into this, but I'm just saying his action basically just says, you have no excuse to stop me anymore. So basically anything that stands in my way, I will, you know, take care of it. Not that, you know, just blind out killing people, but calculated. And that's what I would like Batman is to be, a calculated, determined doer of justice. And justice not in the sense of, you know, oh, you know, I don't want to kill him because, you know, I don't want to infringe on the laws and or the, you know, the red tape. Killing means you are helping society by getting rid of this guy so he won't kill another person.
Well, it's an interesting question, and it's something that's probably, you know, faced a lot of people in real life.
Well, I think it comes down to, if you're satisfied with the cartoon depth of Batman, then that's fine. But I wanted more depth, more realistic and raw out of the Batman that I, you know, envision in my head. So I hope eventually change that. But if it doesn't, that's fine too. But it's not going to appeal to me as some people would. And like I said, when people talk in depth about Batman, it kind of, you know, yeah, I would like to go into depth with Batman. But the thorn is always there, that they're basically milking it by recycling the whole process over and over so they can make it a story. Whereas if you really want to make this character appealing to, I guess, people like me, you would make something very, you know, third degree. I mean, you know, with three dimension instead of two dimension. But if it's two dimension, that's fine. That's how we can discuss it. But to try to make a 3D character out of Batman, I don't think that's going to work out. But that's
interesting. I don't know. I'm not quite sure I understand why you think that killing people adds another dimension. And that seems to be the main thing that splits Batman from other people.
Well, killing is one aspect of it. The thing that makes Batman 2D is because his inability to see the repercussions. I mean, even you and I understand.
No, I mean, I think in most
what Batman can't for some reason.
Yeah, no, I think in most of the things, it's fairly clear that he understands that, you know, by just imprisoning the Joker, he'll get out again, and, you know, that kind of stuff. But he still does it because it's the right thing to do, or he feels.
See, that's the thing. It's right. Basically a self-denial.
I think that's your opinion, Hen. Because I think a lot of people are actually faced by that thing in real life, you know, and that there is someone who can essentially get off scot-free. I mean, it's happened before. If you've got enough money, generally, it's hard to, you know, things don't, you know, work, you know, in a sort of a...
Well, let's put it this way. Someone goes into your house, John, murders your entire family. Not only that, basically does, you know, mental harm. I won't go into details, but somebody has caused so much suffering, and then you capture the guy, and then he goes to the jail, and then he gets out like 2 months later, commits a crime again to somebody else, and you capture him again, and you basically are telling me that you're willing to put him back in the system, not once, not twice, well, but what, 10 yeah, times?
That's, I mean, they explore that theme in lots of films. I see what you're saying, but it's kind of not the point. You know, the point is if he just starts killing people, then he's basically compromised his own beliefs. And you know, do you see what I'm saying?
No. There's a code.
I mean, it's kind of
exactly. There's a code. I've read Batman as well. I understand the reasoning behind it, but I can't help but think that the writers of Batman made it up so that it gives an excuse to recycle the story.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And the reason is kind of very, you gotta not look at it to make it work. If you examine it, the code Batman has is basically, I don't want to kill because, you know, that's my code. But the thing is, why do you not kill? You don't kill because you're afraid.
Like you mentioned Lord of the Rings. You know, there, a lot of those characters could have easily just... I mean, some of them had the idea, why don't we just take the ring and use it to fight Sauron, you know? And obviously there's a flaw in that idea, but...
Well, like...
Once you start compromising your beliefs, like, what if Rorschach had said that, you know? It's like, well...
Right.
You know,
That's the fear. That's definitely the fear that, you know, absolute power corrupts. And if Batman starts killing one guy, what makes it, you know, what's it going to make the distinction of him just killing, you know, everybody who, and someday go in a gray area?
Yeah.
That's a definite fear, and rightly so, fear that people should have in that, you know, powerful position. But at the same time, like I said, there's areas that, yes, you do have to question it, but there's also areas that are so clear-cut that if you don't make that distinction or choice, you're pretty much as horrible as the person who kills blindly. Because, A, you know this guy's going to go out and kills more people. And if you finished him off after the third or second cycle, you saved how many thousands of people? If you don't think that way...
I don't know. I think that's kind of a rationalization.
What you're saying, but...
Yeah.
I, personally speaking, I don't feel that way. I couldn't kill another person under any circumstances at all that you care to give me. I just couldn't do it. It's about the worst thing that a person can do. So I wouldn't. That's basically
it. Well, the thing is, so going back to my analogy, if someone went to murder your family.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
But going off and killing that guy is not going to bring them back.
It wouldn't,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's true that people have probably been in that situation in real life. Sorry, Will, to cut you off, but it's. I think that's a rationalization. Oh, I've stopped him from killing, you know, people in other, you know, other people's families. You know, what if he was just after you? You know, what if he was just after your family? I don't know.
Right.
I think we've sort of slightly lost control of this debate.
Like I said, I'm not sure
it's very productive. You know, I get what you're saying, Hen. I totally understand. I don't particularly feel the same way. And I think it's the problem with overanalyzing a fairly cardboard comic book character.
Right. That's what I was saying. If you want to talk about 2D Batman, then I'm okay. But when people try to put a 3D aspect into Batman, that's when I... You know, have an issue with it, but the thing is, I saw
the films in 2D, and I don't know. Maybe that's why, because you saw them in 3D. It just
no, I mean like three dimensional. I mean like more realistic. I mean if you're making a
sorry,
joke,
it was a really lame joke.
It was quite a lame joke, John.
I don't mind being the butt of it, but I just can't see why. I'm trying to maybe. See why you guys would not do what I do, would do in that position.
I think it's a bit beyond the scope of our podcast, but basically, as I say, I think killing other people is about the worst thing that's possible. I mean, we're stuck with this sort of fairly limited thing where, you know, you're inside your body and you can move it around and do that kind of stuff. And to take that away from another sort of consciousness inside another body, I can't really understand, because that's their entire everything right there. And you can't get rid of that. It doesn't matter what they do. It's terrible.
Let me put in another aspect then. Say, all this history with Joker and Batman, and then we come to this point in time now where, you know, you finally captures the Joker. Would you guys, in the court, vote for the death penalty for the Joker as of now, through all the histories involved?
I couldn't be on any jury like that, because I would never, ever, under any circumstances, vote for the death penalty, so I would be ineligible for that jury.
I feel the same way. It doesn't bring those people back, you know.
We're not asking for people to come back. We're asking.
I know, but that's essentially what you're. You're saying, okay, well, we want to kill this guy so he doesn't do it again, or
right.
Killed people, so it's an eye for an eye. But I really think that's. You profit nothing from that way of thinking, just because it doesn't equal, you know, because you've killed someone doesn't mean that you deserve death yourself necessarily. Because you've stabbed someone's eye out doesn't mean that your eye should be stabbed out. I mean,
that's
Hammurabi. It's an eye for an eye, you know. And
that's what I
agree
with.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think what is not being counted upon here is that...
I think it's a slippery slope is what I'm trying to say, sorry. You know,
well,
you start compromising basic human rights.
But, yeah, I agree with you, John. I feel that way as well. I mean, obviously, you know, we have a society where certain countries have the death penalty and they don't put large numbers of people to death, depending on the country in particular you're talking about. But... yeah, I agree. I cannot sanction it under any circumstances. Sorry.
So you guys are against,
I feel about it, you know.
You guys are against the death penalty then?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Even like prevention? I mean,
yes. No, literally everything you come up with. Even killing Hitler before he's killed anyone to save, you know, millions of lives in the Second World War. Even killing one person to save the rest of existence from, you know, doom.
So if somebody was to go into your house, start stabbing people...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd try and defend myself, but I wouldn't try and kill them.
Well,
I'd probably try and stop them killing me, and if I killed them accidentally, then that's horrible. That's really, really horrible. But intention is obviously a part of...
That's what I'm getting at. You're preventing him from going. If you have a gun and he goes with a knife, goes after someone you love, you're going to shoot him, correct?
No, guns are really dangerous.
Well, I might try
and sort of tackle him or something, and if he falls and, you know, hits his head in such a way that that kills him,
but
it's not my fault because I didn't intend to kill him in that sense.
I'm not putting any blame or anything. I'm just giving
a scenario.
Okay,
so if I shoot him in the foot, for example, you think, I know what you're trying to say. Like, there's a situation where if I have a gun and he's there and I try and shoot him, I don't know. I feel guns are very dangerous in that kind of situation.
I totally understand, but the idea behind that analogy is that you're preventing him from killing someone. And that's basically what happens. If
that's fine,
are doing the death penalty.
Yeah, no, I understand. But there's a difference between other people choosing to do things with their free will and me choosing to do things with my free will. I basically can't stop other people from making decisions like that.
I don't understand. What do you mean by that? Because it's basically just if somebody's doing harm to me. Basically, I'm just self-defending myself, and if I have to kill the guy, I will. And basically, what you're telling me, if somebody was going after someone you love, even to the point where you need to kill them to stop them, you won't.
Yeah, I won't.
So what is this? I mean, what about the people that says that, you know, the person who committed the crime is not only the person who committed a crime, but the person who does nothing about it.
Well, then, in that sense, I'm culpable. But that's different because their moral systems and mine are different. I obviously act in a way that I think is the most moral way I can be. That doesn't necessarily have to correspond to what the law says or what other people think.
Right, to the point of another person's death. You're willing to stand around and do nothing.
Oh, I'm not saying I would do nothing, but I wouldn't try and kill them.
Right, you know. Well, in the end result is you'll shoot that gun. Correct, to stop them.
As I say, I don't know how I feel. I mean, it's a weird situation where I, you know, have a loaded gun in my house and that kind of stuff. But yeah, okay, in that random, fairly strange, contrived situation, I might try and shoot at them. I would definitely stay away from anything that I feel could kill them. So maybe the leg, or if I was really willing to take an enormous risk, the arm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, going back, it's just relation to the Batman game and the...
Yeah, I think it's kind of beyond... Sorry, guys.
We have jumped pretty beyond well off things. Anyway, we can cut this discussion down a bit, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope you don't mind, but because I think it's beyond the scope. It's interesting.
No,
there are some, raise some interesting questions, but I don't know. If you haven't seen it, Hent, just sort of pausing the podcast for a moment, I would recommend seeing the... Have you ever seen the movie The Life of David Gale?
No, I didn't.
Kevin Spacey? I recommend it. I mean, you probably won't like it.
What's it about?
There's a guy that's an advocate of eliminating the death penalty. He basically eventually is accused of rape and murder and ends up on death row himself. And it's kind of... it's an interesting... It's kind of a contrived situation, but it's an interesting film from that point of view. If you're fascinated by the whole sort of question of death penalty, if you're just kind of like, well, I don't understand why the whole world doesn't have it, then you probably won't enjoy the film. But it's a very good film anyway. So, but I just think, just one last thing. I think it's very easy to think, you know, what you would do in that situation, and a lot of people might. You know, be right, but until you're actually there, you know, it's very difficult to say. I think
you might feel as if you would want to kill someone,
but I don't know, Hen, that you'd actually, if you're actually behind the trigger,
well,
you'd be that convinced
the thing
about
is,
it.
Equally
I have
for
to
me,
do...
John. I agree. I mean, in that situation, you know, it's quite possible that some kind of thing inside me, you know, a primal instinct or whatever, survival, whatever, would take over, and I wouldn't have that control that I think I would have.
I've heard that, and I don't know why, it's just some weird part of the human sort of our wiring, but I haven't experienced this myself, thankfully, but you do hear it from soldiers that have come back from wars and whatnot, that even when the death was justified, it is something that you have to live with. But I think what a lot of people have said is the really scary part about it is the first time it's really difficult, but it does seem to get easier and easier as you go on, which I think says a lot about, you know, us as an entity. But anyway, well, thanks for the discussion, guys. Sorry, it's
No, it was interesting. As I say, I don't know if anyone listening would find it interesting at all.
Yeah,
so it might be worth cutting down or out, maybe.
I hope you won't be offended if that's kind of cut down, because it's not really about games or geeky stuff. It's an interesting investigation of Batman as a you know, his psyche. But
nope, I totally understand.
Okay. Well, we're gone well over an hour and a half. I've been trying to, like, keep an eye on the time and aim for about an hour, but...
I think that's a good plan, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's enough of a discussion.
For the future.
yeah. can take. So, but anyway, thanks, guys. I hope we can.
Should we do a quick sort of, you know, goodbye?
Or... Oh, yeah, sorry. So, Will, do you want to? I'm kind of not sure what to say, actually.
Okay. So, thank you for listening again. We'll see you again sometime soon. Bye.
Bye.
Take care, guys.